I'm Sandy Toksvig, and welcome back to the News Quiz Extra. This is the extended version of the show. Think of it like a revealing bikini on a celebrity showing off all the bits you don't normally get to see. Well, thank goodness we're on the radio. So make sure you've taken the shutter off and trained those zoom lenses this way, and treat yourself to even more of the News Quiz. Go on. You deserve it.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Bath Store website, read by Charlotte Green.
More goes into a Bath Store toilet than you may think.
Our thanks to Vince Rogers for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Susan Kalman and writer and comedian Bob Mills. And opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Andy Hamilton. Susan, who got into a cat fight over human rights?
I always like starting the show with a story that made me angry. And this one was a particularly delightful one at the Festival of Fun, I like to call the Conservative Party Conference. And it was Theresa May, and she was giving examples of why the Human Rights Act should be abolished. And she gave an example of an illegal immigrant who, and she was not making this up, was allowed to stay in the country because he had a cat. Mm. It's absolutely untrue. The person was not allowed to stay in the country because he had a cat. It was because of an Article 8 family right that he'd claimed because he'd been in a relationship for 4 years. And Ken Clark waded in the way that Ken Clark always delightfully does. I love Ken Clark because he just says what he's thinking. And he said that the example was laughable and childlike, to which Theresa May responded by giving him a dead leg.
It's a bit worrying when our leaders start to run with things that have been broken by the Daily Star and then debunked, isn't it? And you sort of think, Hague wouldn't do that. She's a lightweight. She's the Home Secretary. She ought to know these things. You can't base policies on urban myths. Things like, yeah, someone I know, they went on holiday, right, and they got these headaches when they got back, and the doctors couldn't work out what it was. And then a bit of eggshell fell out of her ear one day, and a whole ostrich crawled out. And think, no, it's not. And Hague wouldn't do this. Whether or not you agree with Hague, he is a substantial figure. He would not stand up at the Tory conference and say, I have it on good authority that in hot countries, heathen babies eat their parents when they're born.
I love the fact that they dragged Ken Clark out to apologise. He had to come out and apologise. And he said, I regret the words that I used. So you regret what you said. I regret the words that I used.
I liked it when he was Health Secretary. He was fantastic as the Health Secretary because he'd stand there with his shirt bursting at the seams, smoking a cigar, saying, well, I think the whole nation must pull itself together and get fit. Do you think we should start spreading the rumour that her kitten heels are made of real kittens?
But it's true. That's punchline when she delivered it. It was kind of Oscar Wilde, a handbag. And he had a cat! As if everyone was meant to go, oh my God, it was a cat, it wasn't even a puppy. Because cats are always blamed, they're always seen as evil, and cats are lovely, gorgeous, delicious little things. You have to treat them like adults and talk to them properly.
What do you mean, delicious, nice. Susan? I didn't quite understand how that got in that list.
No. So the cat wasn't the issue, although the Daily Mail has started a campaign to remove all immigrant cats from the country immediately. I've got a Burmese cat. He's safe. I've persuaded the authorities. He has a stable family life, so well done, Muppet. But I had to dress him up quite a lot, because you know I dress up my cats. So the thing about...
So often things that you say worry me.
Well, you know, it takes a lot of time and effort. The other day I got caught, this is slightly off topic, the Tesco man came with my shopping, and they always try and get in your house, right? And I don't want him in my house because I've dressed the cats up. Now, the point is, they give you a two-hour window, so you don't know when they're coming, so you're not going to delay that kind of thing just for the Tesco man. You start anyway. So he came with my shopping, and I was in my dressing gown. I opened the door a crack, and I said, just leave it there. And he was quite insistent. He was looking around the door, and he pushed the door, and I fell over, and the door opened, and all he saw was four cats dressed as policemen. Now, it was prime suspect day. I was Jane Tennyson, obviously. So anyway...
Can I just give you some advice?
Yes.
Waitrose also deliver.
Can I just say that the one thing that I've found quite disturbing about this is that you answer the door to the Tesco man in your dressing gown. You had dressed the cats, but not yourself.
He enjoys life, Ken Clark, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He likes his beer, he likes his jazz, he likes knifing his colleagues. I don't know if you saw, it was a very good ITV dramatisation of Thatcher's last days, and it was taken from people's memoirs, and so it was all sort of authentic dialogue. And there was a scene where the cabinet ministers were in a huddle. They were saying, well, one of us will have to explain to Margaret that she can't go on. And immediately Clark said, I'll do it. And they said to him, all right, Ken, you can do it, but you won't be too brutal, will you? He said, no, no, of course I won't be brutal. And they hard cut to him saying to Thatcher, basically, Maggie, you're finished.
Theresa May was criticised by Ken Clark for attacking the Human Rights Act by claiming that a Bolivian student escaped deportation because he had a pet cat, when in fact he was allowed to stay in the country because he was in a long-term relationship. The Justice Secretary, Ken Clark, openly scoffed at May's claims, calling them laughable and childlike. Mr Clark was immediately deported. 2 points to Ms Kalman. Bob, have a listen to this.
You say it best when you say nothing at all.
Bob, who said it best by saying nothing at all?
Was that Ronan Keating?
Yes, according to my notes,
yes.
That's
a lovely song. You say it best when you say nothing at all. That song is saying, shut up. Is this David?
David.
Oh, I see. You brought me on here to pick on my leader. All right. Now, David made his speech. It's not what he says, though. This is what people don't understand. No one cares what politicians say. It's how they say it. Politicians used to stand there rather awkwardly and wooden with notes and things like that. And then they invented the autocue. So it was like, I don't even need notes. I just need to stare doggedly into the camera. But David doesn't even need that. David just wanders about. You look at David and you think, that's who we want running the country. A man who can walk about and chat and throw things at. Michael McIntyre, that's who we want running this country.
But telling, I mean, he has the style of Henry V with the content of a Henry vacuum cleaner. It's a sort of... when you listen to it, he doesn't say, we must, there's a problem and we must do something.
Yes, but that's...
And it's a secret, otherwise I'd tell you what it is that we're going to do.
That's the art of politics. Try talking for 40 minutes and saying nothing. It's a harder skill than it first seems to be. Sometimes you make statements just by accident, but he's guarded himself so clearly. You bring it all together, there's nothing there.
He asked Britain to avoid can't-do sogginess. What is that?
Well, no, you obviously don't go to the same parts of Britain as I do, because sometimes I walk through Britain and I think, this is so soggy.
He was targeting women, though, wasn't he? That was interesting. Do you see that the spin doctors organised it so that he walked to conference every morning? He arrived with a different woman. And you could see
with
Boris...
a different woman?
Yeah, Boris was thinking, he's stealing my act. And one of the lady MPs looked like a 13-year-old on a date with sort of someone out of Take That. She was just gazing at him like a doe-eyed robot.
The bit I liked was the sign... Did you watch the sign language guy? I always enjoy that, because Cameron used the word leadership 19 times and right 29 times, and he seemed to keep doing the Hitler salute, the guy.
He did.
We had a signer on this once, do you remember?
Yeah.
We had a signer on a radio show. And I remember doing an answer that ended with the words, President Clinton. And I looked across to watch him, and the signage for President Clinton was a zip being done up.
David Cameron spoke for an hour at the Conservative Party conference without announcing any new policies or mentioning that day's disappointing economic figures. Cameron began with, first, I want to say something to you in this hall, which let us all know that he understands the basic concept of a speech. 2 points to Bob. Jeremy, who can't afford to bring home the bacon?
It's your lot, the Vikings. Yes. They brought in a tax on butter because they think that butter's unhealthy, which is actually not true, because the best thing to fry in is animal fat because it doesn't turn into trans fats. Trans fats are very dangerous because they change your gender if you eat too many. But, yeah, it's a myth that you should fry in vegetable oil and that you should use marge, you know, fake, not real type butter substitute things like bugger me, it's spread, and things like that.
That's a diagnosis rather than anything else.
What and, they said when the children had chicken pox.
It's not just Denmark, is it? France are bringing in a fat tax as well. And I think it'd be brilliant. So you get this prospect of fat tax exiles who sort of fly off to the Seychelles for a bacon sandwich. I think it'd be...
Maybe it could be like the smoking ban. People who want to eat something fatty now have to go outside on the patio and hunch in the doorway.
I like butter. Butter is one of my favourite things. I have butter on absolutely everything.
I love it. I'm sitting on two cases of it as we speak.
You can make use of the obese people. I don't know any myself, but you can... It's a good thing about the wireless, they can't see you. But you can use them. All this money they give out for cold weather payments for the old people, just send a couple of fat lads around to sit with them. Yeah. One either side of the sofa. It's body warmth.
Nice.
The body warmth is the warmth of all the warmth.
Shouldn't they also give money back if you eat well? I mean, I do think every time I have a Ryvita...
A fat tax rebate.
Yeah, so... Do you not think, though, when you eat Ryvita that you deserve some kind of compensation?
I think you need counselling after Ryvita. I once bought some Energen rolls. Does anyone remember Energen rolls? And it was a bank holiday, and there was going to be no shops open until the Tuesday. And it was a Saturday afternoon. This was in the days when bank holidays were proper and everything was enforced by the Witchfinder General. And it was about 5 o'clock in Prestos on a Saturday afternoon. I thought, there's no bread. There'll be no bread till Tuesday. And I bought a box of Energen rolls. And I was a bit suspicious because it was lighter than an empty box. Got it home, and I put a knife in the thing, and it was like Buffy staking a vampire. This thing just disintegrated. It was like a husk. It was a crust that was completely empty.
What was the point of these?
They were very, very low in calories.
Yeah, they were diet rolls. Yeah, they're basically air.
Yeah.
You know what they used to do? They were the things that you used to eat and then drink a pint of water, and then they would expand like polystyrene in your stomach so you couldn't eat again for a month.
Just start.
Or an hour, in my case.
I think. Do you know what? I think Bob's idea of using human beings for insulation...
Yeah.
There's probably someone, the Minister for Energy, listening to this go out and thinking, do you know, that might just work?
So let's follow it through. So, Bob, for example, you're coming round to keep me warm. And so I open the door, you're there, you go, I'm your heating for the evening.
After I've screamed at the cats dressed as pirates. Me and an equally fat friend sit either side of you.
Who gets the remote?
And do you look straight ahead or did you both look at me as well? And would you make me a cup of tea? Is that, or do I have to make you a cup of tea?
Well, you won't be able to get up, will you? Because you're squeezed between two very large people.
I just don't think it's going to work. Not that I don't want you to come round, Bob. I think we'd have a nice time together.
You know what would happen? You know what would happen is you'd have your two fat people who've come round, and then there'd be a ring at the door, and there'd be two other fat people offering you a discount if you go to... That's what would happen.
You see,
and we do broadband. Denmark has introduced a fat tax on foods which contain more than 2.3% saturated fats. The tax targets high-fat products such as butter, milk and deep-fried Lego. The tax is expected to raise over 2 million kroner for the Danish government, which they're going to spend on one enormous pastry. 2 points to Jeremy. Andy, why is Auntie swapping her bloomers for belt and braces?
This is about cuts at the BBC. They're having to cut 20%. Yeah, they're draconian cuts. In fact, I work on the BBC One show, Outnumbered, and we've had a memo saying that we've got to shoot one of the kids. So it's been taken seriously. But I worked out this week exactly what the BBC should cut, and it's business news. Because somebody somewhere made the mistake of confusing business news with news. And Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock, the first item on the news, the proper news, was that Tesco sales had dropped by 0.9%. It was treated as if horses had started eating their young in the street. I mean, no wonder the markets are so fragile if everything like that gets the Armageddon treatment. Then some spokespillock came on and said, oh, yeah, you know, we're getting squeezed. You think, statistically, less than 1% is not a squeeze. That's not even a mild fondle, is it? It's ridiculous. What? The footsie, right? Hugh Edwards comes on and he starts talking about the footsie, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, well, I know the footsie is going to either have gone up or gone down, depending on whether the fear has outweighed the greed this week. It'll either have gone up or it'll have gone down. That's not news. It's only news if Hugh Edwards says the footsie today stayed absolutely still.
I think what's driven the markets mad is that people have started to eat pork bellies. Because for years, they were just futures. Yes. You just bought pork belly futures. You never ate it. You just invested in it. But then suddenly, it became very, very fashionable to eat very fatty, cheap pork. We used to have it when I was a kid, because my mum didn't realise it was supposed to be for purely speculative value. It wasn't, wasn't really nutritional at all. But yeah, suddenly it became very fashionable. It wouldn't be hilarious to start eating poor people's food at dinner parties. It would be marvellous. So every posh restaurant you go to is pork belly cooked in betting slips and things like that. And that's what's happened, because the whole speculative value of it has gone... I don't understand economics.
I think they're knocking down Television Centre.
It's going to be a football stadium.
Yes.
So how are they going to play in those round corridors? I don't know.
They can't knock it down. I mean, you wouldn't be allowed to knock down Covent Garden Opera House, would you? I mean, that's a part of the cultural heritage of the country. I spent much of my 20s and 30s in that building. It was...
What, Covent Garden Opera House?
No. I had some great memories. I was looking out the window one day and there were some men running around in balaclavas down by the security gate. And my mate said, oh, look, Dave Allen must be filming. It was a wages raid.
Apparently the children's channels are protected from the cuts. I don't know why. Lots of children in the past were happy with a couple of flower pots who couldn't speak properly. I don't know why...
One of the things they're doing is they're talking about stopping broadcasting at a certain time, and that fills me with fear, because growing up, I don't know if anyone else remembers here, remember when the television stopped and you just had the test card of that freakish child with the clown balloon or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they stop, I know I've got satellite television, but that's full of programmes like Oops, I Married a Chicken and things like that.
Don't knock Sky Television, because I'll tell you what, 2 o'clock in the morning... If there's anything you want to know about sharks or Hitler, that's the place,
mate. But it's true, and also there's lots of customs programmes on. I can now perform a frisk search on anyone in this audience because I've watched Nothing to Declare so many times now that I can do... Because you have to skim the body, not touch the body. That's the key. I practice it sometimes at the bus stop. And you just have to, you have to skim the body, not touch the body. And you could do that when you come around and heat me up. At the...
I grew up in the early years in Denmark. My father was a newsreader for Danish television, and then we only had one channel, and the channel would come on at 7 with my dad, and then he'd read the news for half an hour. I think I thought that's what everybody's dad did. And then we'd have a half-hour documentary about, you know, the Queen's silver spoon collection. And then it would close down, because it's all been a very... all been terribly exciting. My dad was half the output of Danish television. I think Radio 4 pretty unaffected, though, apart from the pips, which are now going to be pre-recorded as opposed to the live orchestra we currently have.
I don't think they're completely sad for Radio 4. I know there's going to be a new series of The History of the World in 12 Objects.
Could they not get rid of the weather, OK? I know this is a radical thought, but honestly, you can just look out the window. I just... And does it just mean, do you glaze over? Honestly, I really try and concentrate. And the weather comes on and I think, right, I'm going to pay attention. And then the whole camera moves all the way. And I think, oh, this is a funny bit of Ireland from that view. And then I realise it's finished and I forgot to listen to what the...
Tell you what is going to be irritating about this story, though, is that those of us who work a lot for the BBC get this everywhere we go, where somebody starts, you says, bloody BBC, this programme on the other night. I pay for that. I pay for BBC programmes. It's a tax. And nobody ever points out, you pay for ITV as well. You pay a purchase tax. But you try going into Tesco and saying, actually, could you knock 4p off those cornflakes? Because I don't watch ITV.
Do you know what I do? This is absolutely true. I do get very irritated. For £145 a year, people get BBC One, Two, Three, Four, Radios One, Two, Three, Four, Five, Six, F4 Extra, all the local radio, £145 a year. And then people pay £60 a month for Sky Television and they don't see how much good stuff they're getting for the money. I'm sorry, it makes me enraged.
But the BBC, sorry, doesn't help itself. When it issues a statement which says the BBC is axing 2,000 jobs to save £670 million, and you think, how much are these people earning?
The BBC today unveiled its cost-cutting proposals for the next 6 years. Daytime programming on BBC Two will be completely cut, although anyone having withdrawal symptoms can just go to an antiques auction or follow around an estate agent. At the end of round one, the scores are Susan and Bob have got 4 points, but so too have Jeremy and Andy. We start round two with some advice from the Live Strong website.
If coffee consistently causes loose stools, stop eating them until you can be seen by a physician.
Can I just say that this week Charlotte chose her own cuttings? Can I just say? And our thanks to Jake Stevens for sending us that. Susan, where is the first cut the deepest and no longer free?
Is it Yorkshire?
Yorkshire.
Yeah. Mm. A GP's surgery has sent letters out to some of the patients saying that the NHS was no longer funding certain small operations, so they would have to go private with these operations, potentially to a company owned by the GP surgery, which is one of the problems, is they're referring people to their own company. And it's for small things like ingrown toenails or wart or mole removal, that kind of thing. And it throws up a number of issues. Number one, if you're being asked £250 for that kind of operation, I would genuinely try and do it myself. And I think, do you know what I mean? I think the thing is that people will go, I'll just whop off that mole myself. Now, for example, I once had a mark here on my upper lip and I didn't know if it was a mole or a bit of biro. You know that way? And I phoned up my dad and I said, do you think it's a mole or a biro? And he said, pick it with a compass and see if it comes back.
Is your father a doctor or a geography teacher?
He's a doctor.
He's a doctor.
Yeah, but... in Scotland,
he used to be chief medical officer. So I went, all right, then. And so I picked it. It came back. It was a mole.
So they need to be clear about what. If you say, I want to come in for mole removal, you could just have been up to something very odd in the bedroom.
Is your bedroom underground?
This surgery in Yorkshire doing the wart removal, do they do 3 for 2?
Well, this is the worry, isn't it? And all this blurring of the NHS and the private thing. So, you know, you go in now into surgeries and there's always like a little computer to check in straight away. It could come up and say, I see you recently had a flu jab. Other people who had a flu jab also bought Cliff Richard's box.
And also, the adverts are going to be rubbish. Because when they do like laser eye surgery now and cosmetics, they have adverts on the television. They're always rather beautiful people playing tennis and yachting. And then they have laser eye surgery and they play tennis and yacht even better. What's the adverts going to be for ingrown toenail removal? Some beautiful woman on the catwalk limping slightly.
They'll have a woman roller skating. That's what they do for any adverts for women's products. They just have people roller skating. Yeah. I never roller skate apart from once a month.
It's a very good ad for a while of a woman vicar, and she had cystitis, and that was the whole thing was that she couldn't concentrate during her sermon because it's slightly itchy. It's probably the high point of her career, that actress.
Yeah. Do you know what works for almost anything? And this is a genuine tip. Take it if you want. A bread and milk poultice. Have you ever used a bread and milk poultice?
Obviously not.
Right. It works for almost any form of infection or anything like that. You just get a bit of stale bread, put it in some milk, and you wrap it round, and it works brilliant. You don't need antibiotics. You don't need anything else. It is inconvenient if you have some form of sore on your face and you've got a bit of bread. You tend to get attacked by seagulls and other birds of prey.
A GP practice in York is offering to perform private treatments on those patients who have been denied procedures thanks to NHS cuts. The GPs in question have defended themselves by saying they do the operations at cost price, or, as their ad put it, come to our everything-must-go hysterectomy clear-out.
Should have gone to Womb Savers.
GPs have been accused of privatisation via the back door, which sounds like a pretty invasive procedure. 2 points to Ms. Kalman. Bob, who have the law right behind them?
It's the police training criminals, but warning them by post that they were trailing them.
Yep.
Sending them a letter.
They sent five. It's in Basildon.
Well, of course it's in Basildon. Well, we've taken that as read. It was going to be...
It's possible, of course, it was written on Basildon. I haven't... Okay. But those five criminals, known criminals, got letters saying, we're going to follow you for a week and that'll teach you.
Yeah.
It relies on somebody not wanting to be followed 24/7, which doesn't allow for the very lonely criminal.
But then again, never underestimate the stupidity of Basildon criminals who think, well, I wasn't going to do anything, but as I've got an audience...
But don't you think it's double standards? I mean, you're a police officer, right, and you follow somebody around for 7 days.
No one's supposed to know that, by the way.
No one. Anyway. But imagine one is a police officer, and you follow somebody around for 7 days, and that's absolutely fine. You're an ordinary person. You follow Cheryl Cole for a couple of months, and suddenly you're threatened with legal proceedings. I don't understand it. I think it's...
If you assign one policeman to follow a burglar, that's basically just tagging, only without the technology element, isn't it? That's exactly. All it is.
Old-fashioned following, like it used to be, when they'd follow you going ding-ling-ling, ding-ling, step on it, driver, there isn't a moment to lose. And the criminal would be going, looks a lummy, here's the law. But you have to have cars to do that.
The one time they're not going to follow them, as I understand it, is in the early hours of the morning.
Ah.
Which, I mean, I'm not an experienced burglar, but I would have thought that was maybe an optimum time.
But I think the police are getting demoralised, because I heard a siren the other night, and it was the most plaintive sound. It just sort of went, soon be Christmas.
Five known criminals in Basildon, Essex, have been given letters informing them that police will be following them for a week to get them to rethink their lives of crime. The initiative is called Operation Bright Shadow, showing a fundamental misunderstanding about the nature of shadows. 2 points to Bob. Jeremy, can you please just get on with it and answer the question before I lose my job?
Oh, stress is responsible for most work-related time off. I'm not in a very good position to question anybody saying that they suffer from work-related stress on account of I haven't done a decent day's work in my entire life. But apparently it's because most people are now very worried that they're going to lose their pension and lose their job. They're very, very stressed out. But you get columnists say, it's a lot of nonsense. There's no such thing as stress. And I think, yeah, but you just sit around in your pants all day knocking out columns. There's no stress in your life.
I was very stressed the other day. I went into Waitrose, not one loose avocado.
I think it's the people you work with. You spend more time with the people that you work with than your family. The people you want to spend time with, you're forced to spend time with people that you actually detest. And it can really build up. And the thing
Tell me about it, Susie.
That's why I had to leave the law. I ended up once in the bottom of a filing cabinet.
What, like sleeping. Hong Kong food?
Yeah, like Hong Kong food. Yeah.
So, had somebody put you there or you were hiding?
What happened was, I remember sitting at my desk thinking, I wonder if I can fit in the bottom of that filing cabinet. No one batted an eyelid. I emptied the bottom of the filing cabinet out. They probably just thought she's doing some admin. So they're all typing away and I just got in the bottom and closed the door.
Were you a proper lawyer at this point, seeing people? So your client arrives and they say, where is Susan? I'll just get her. We filed her in the...
She's under S.
According to a survey by the Chartered Institute of Personnel Development, stress has become the number one reason for long-term absence from work. The number two reason is being a member of the royal family. 2 points to Jeremy. Andy, have a listen to this.
Monkey, 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 monkey. I can do the monkey, you can do the monkey.
Andy, why is it now a case of monkey think, monkey do?
This is a science story.
Yeah?
They've been able to get monkeys to play a computer game where they manipulated a virtual arm using just thought. And the good news is that this could lead to technology whereby paralysed people could be given a robotic exoskeleton so that they could move around and experience the world again, which would be fantastic. My only worry is I think they've got to be very careful. The doctors have got grave responsibility to get the form right, because there needs to be a question on the form that says, are you an arch fiend who wants the robotic exoskeleton so you can subjugate mankind? A little bit worried about the monkeys as well. It could be Planet of the Robo-Apes. Very quickly.
I never understand the science stories. There was a scanner and it showed the monkeys' brainwaves and they're shaped like tall sine waves and it just looks like they're just thinking about bananas the whole time. That's
if you've lost your arm, like in a threshing accident, it would be a wonderful thing to think, I can now have a robotic arm, but it's slightly adding insult to injury. You've got to have a monkey as well.
No,
the monkey comes with it.
No, the monkey's an optional extra, yeah. I think.
Because you don't want to have a new arm and then be walking past cars and the arm suddenly shoots out and pulls the windscreen wiper. And you're having to say, no, that's not me, that's the monkey.
Imagine the next PG Tips ad, though. It'd be like The Matrix.
What they've done is remarkable, because not only have they been able to make the arm move, but they're making the brain believe it's touching something, which is remarkable, because you could add that. So I'm touching Bob.
Go on.
And I could make that double the pleasure by replacing you with Cheryl Cole.
Two monkeys have learnt to move the virtual arm of a computer game character using the power of thought alone. The monkeys are rhesus monkeys, which are like normal monkeys with a delicious peanutty taste. The lab monkeys learned to control the computer with their mind, as their actual arms were too busy smoking and testing makeup. 2 points to Andy. At the end of round two, the scores are still level pegging. Susan and Bob have got 8, but so too do Jeremy and Andy. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the Aberdeen and North East News.
Scottish ski resorts say they need a level playing field to stop their businesses going downhill.
Thanks to Dr. Marjorie Harper for sending us that. Bob, where might you be able to tie the knot a little more loosely?
Oh, I love this. This is the Mexicans. They've got it all sorted out. You have to understand, Mexico City is very different from Mexico. Mexico is a very staunch Catholic country and is run very old school. Mexico City is like Brighton. They're very liberal in their ways.
Lots of people are top hats. Do you not think it must be the laziest named capital city of
any
country?
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's like, it would be like Washington, D.C. being United States of America town.
Yeah. So Mexico City introduced a new wedding ceremony so that you don't get married till death us do part. You get married for a set amount of time. You're given a rolling marriage licence.
It's 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
You get
barely
2 years.
Barely enough time for a good resentment to bed in.
Absolutely. It's not so much a marriage licence, it's a marriage season ticket.
Yeah, that's it.
We could go, Susan and I could go, and we say, we want to give it a go.
Susan's just looking very, very troubled. It's only so you can stay in the country, Susan.
It's going to get to that stage where I have to marry you, Jeremy, in order to stay in England.
Well, you want independence, love, that's what's going to happen.
To say to somebody, I want to spend possibly 2 years with you. Yeah.
It's a fantastic
idea. Well, in a way, it's a kind of final hurdle towards real equality, isn't it? Because Mexico City opened the institution of marriage up to gay people, and now they're opening it up to people who don't really want to get married.
It's equal rights for the feckless.
Yeah. I quite like this two-year thing, because it's about the length of a contract you would rent a television for, you know. Yeah. And when you rent a television and it goes wrong, someone takes it away and gets you a better one, and I think that should happen as well. This one's not working out. Keeps talking during casualty. Take it away, take it away.
It's a wife warranty.
That would be amazing.
I would say to the people of Mexico City who think this is a wonderful, enlightened thing, that they're just signing on for 2 years, make sure that AOL aren't involved in it at all. Because you're going to be there for life, all right?
And Mexico City legislators are proposing introducing marriage contracts which last for 2 years and can be renewed if the spouses are still happy after that. Many conservative Mexicans are up in arms at the idea, saying it tramples all over the fine and noble institution of divorce. 2 points to Bob. Jeremy, where is ketchup no longer de rigueur?
En France. I love the fact that we have expressions that we don't have, like de rigueur. We don't have an English expression of rigour. Because we have to borrow these things, don't we? Like élan and joie de vivre. Because the joy of to live is not a concept in our language, is it? But you don't hear French people going, ah, ça va, ah oui, mustn't crumble. That's not the point. The point is that the French, being nationalistic to the point of xenophobia, don't like ketchup because it is American. And most of the world, although we decry American imperialism, we want Coca-Cola and jeans and Ramones T-shirts. But en France, they hate the Americanization of their culture. And they say it's to do with health. And they say, instead of burgers and fries, we have healthy French dishes in schools, like beef cooked with blue cheese and things like that. So they're limiting the amount of red sauce that they can have.
Sarkozy's particularly... I don't know what happened. He got trapped in a bottle once or something. He's particularly... anti-ketchup, as far as I know.
And mayonnaise. I thought they liked mayonnaise in France because they put it on their chips, and so do the Dutch, which is an abomination. I mean, the Dutch are all stoned. You can't really blame them.
Did you know that the baguette is that shape because Napoleon's soldiers used to carry the bread down their trousers? Did you know that?
Yeah. To impress people at Freddie Mercury tribute concerts?
The French government has decreed that tomato ketchup should be rationed in school canteens to protect French culture. Jacques Hazan, president of the Parents Council, said, "Food is very important here, and we can't have children eating any old thing before stuffing a horse with Roquefort and rolling it into pastry." 2 points to Jeremy. Andy, who decided they could no longer wait for death without a good sit-down?
Well, this is a lovely story. This is a gentleman in Alnwick in Northumbria who had decided that when he passed away, he was going to have a memorial bench by the bus stop. But he suffers from arthritis, and so he thought, sod it, I'll have the memorial bench now while I'm still alive, and then I can sit on it. He's had it engraved, and I think he's got his own name. Next to it, he's put, in the departure lounge. And then he's got his partner's name, and she is indefinitely delayed.
Yeah, it says flight delayed indefinitely.
That's it. And I just think it's a wonderful idea, isn't it? I don't know why he doesn't go the whole hog and actually have his funeral while he's alive. We'll skip the cremation bit, yeah, obviously, but, you know, and do his own eulogy. Wouldn't that be brilliant to write your own eulogy and do it, you know? I was a humble man who will be sorely missed.
Goths sleep in coffins, some of them, don't they?
Do they?
Yeah, and get your money's worth out of it. Because if you think about it, my mortgage is £1,200 a month. I resent being out, frankly. Because it's going to come out of your estate, isn't it? Your memorial bench. Because you see them on clifftops and it'll say something like, he loved this spot. And you think, I bet he didn't really love it. Because he'd have walked past there and said, oh, bloody hell, there's nowhere to sit here.
I don't want a memorial seat. I have had a lifetime of people saying, oh, I thought you were sitting down.
I wrote my own obituary one night. I got drunk and I decided I didn't know how I was going to be remembered, so I wrote my own obituary, and I found it the next day, and I was really harsh about myself because I've just got this fear that I'm going to be found one day on the floor just with my cats eating me, which is probably going to happen. But I decided I wanted a statue of myself in my school, right in the middle of the playing fields, so they can't actually play any sport, so it'll help all the children who were like me who hated sport. There's just going to be a statue of me, not looking triumphant, but just eating a poke of chips, right? And underneath it'll just say, you really don't need maths, love Susan. And then everyone, they can all look at it and realise they too could die lonely in a flat full of old newspapers if they don't get a maths.
I think under Freedom of Information Act, we're all entitled to know what would be said about us if we died on the BBC News.
Years ago, I worked in a newsroom, not for the BBC, and we used to have a thing that we would do on January the 1st. You would put £10 in and you'd name 10 people you thought were likely to die during the year. And you'd put random people in just because it would up your chances. And there was quite a lot of money at stake. And it was awful because suddenly somebody would pass away and you'd just hear a very quiet, yeah.
We had a line in Drop the Dead Donkey, which was actually based on something somebody told us, which was that a memo went round asking if people could stop viewing the obituary for Mrs. Thatcher because it was wearing out the tape.
I came back from holiday once and my agent rang the next day and he said, ITN rang, they want you to do Margaret Thatcher's obituary programme. I said, well, how on earth did I miss that? Surely they would have picked up on it and she hadn't, you know. Not. Mm. So this was about four years ago.
You're an odd choice, if I might say so. No, but
they've had this ready to go and they must have had all the, like, former prime ministers will have been on there and interviewed and asked for a quote and there'll be Tony Blair saying, well, she was the people's Pinochet. Anyway.
James Campbell, a Northumberland pensioner, has paid for his own memorial bench to be placed at his favourite bus stop, even though he's not yet dead. Not many people have their own memorial bench at their favourite bus stop because most people don't have a favourite bus stop. I think most people in the village were a little amazed, said Mr Campbell, before getting on the bus to place flowers on his own grave. Mr Campbell was inspired to install his own memorial bench by Nick Clegg, who has a seat in the cabinet but might as well be dead. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Ms. Kelman.
This has been sent in by Gudrun O'Root, and it's from the October issue of the Marshland Messenger, a monthly publication around East Riding. Weight Watchers will meet at 7 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church. Please use large double door at the side entrance.
Mr. Mills.
This is from Mohammed Abdullah, and it was a sound advert on Classic FM, but it's the picture of it as well. 1 in 9 of us experience bladder weakness. Click here for a free sample.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by John Banks, who claims he saw it in his local shop window. Outdoor rabbit hutch for sale. 3 years old, good as new. Suit rabbit.
Mr. Hamilton.
And this is another bit of real life sent in from Sue Denton. And she says, I was driving behind a prison van and someone had written in the dust on the back door, no prisoners are kept in this van overnight.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Andy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Susan and Bob with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Daily Telegraph sent to us by Margaret Dyer.
In Liverpool this morning, 600 attendees will gather for the first Labour Women's Conference in many years. Ed Miliband will be the only man allowed to watch the sisterhood in action. As his deputy says, it's quite an awe-inspiring sight, and it's good for him to expose himself to that.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Susan Kalman, Bob Mills, Jeremy Hardy and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Rodri Crooks and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Benjamin Partridge and Angela Barnes. The producers were Victoria Lloyd and John Pocock.